Welcome to The Firm Report, the show where we pull back the curtain on what it really takes to build and grow a successful law practice. Each week, we'll be talking with attorneys, marketing pros, and operational specialists from law firms around the country. We'll dig into real stories, smart strategies, and the practical tips that can help you grow your firm and serve your clients better. Let's get into it.
So I've actually studied this quite a bit, right? So you have the one channel or the one platform that you become successful on, and it not only leads to other platforms, it leads to other businesses. Mm-hmm. Where now, and this is what I learned from working with some of these very high-level successful influencers, mm-hmm. is they, like, new opportunities are created, right? Because you're just, what you were just saying, you're removing that distribution bottleneck. Now it's like, no, anyone can get distribution. For some people, that's great because they're talented and they would not have a chance at getting distributed before. For other people, that's not good that anybody can get distribution, right? So you have to, like, it's really this time where if you're really good, you can attract an audience. And now because of the other opportunities that are out there, you don't even need that big of an audience to actually turn it into something professional. It's super interesting. Kids understand so much more than we think that they understand, right? Mm-hmm. And they're really, they can pick up and learn things so much quicker than adults sometimes. You know, here's a story. We were writing, we wrote our first children's book, and I was trying to teach my kids, in business, you can't just do one thing and then sit and rest and stop and think you've arrived. So I said, look, we're about to launch our first book. What should we do as a group together? And we had this discussion and they said, well, Dad, what's our next book? And that's exactly where my mind was going, but I didn't want to tell them. But they said, well, Dad, we can't just have one book. You have all these other stories that you've told us. We should do the next book. And it was just this beautiful interaction with these kids where I just asked the questions and they answered it.
What I always find intriguing or interesting is, like, when we talk to, when I personally, like, talk to, like, clients or, like, prospects or even friends about this, it's like, regardless of what you're going to do, there's going to be fans and there's going to be haters. It just so happens with success, always. Like, there's no middle ground. If you're making an impact, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. We all play the game to win, you know, or we hope that we're all playing the game to win.
You're trying to win.
Your team is, right? So, you know, when you're looking at these things and you start to look at, like, content production and, you know, there's you got to almost have, like, a fearless mentality of persistence, of, like, how, you know, the landscape's evolved where it rewards, like, persistence and momentum and just this path to succeed at, you know, at varying costs. Yeah. I'm Zach Hoffman and I have my guest today, John Mashney from Mavisi. Thanks for joining.
Zach, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. Really excited to chat.
For sure. How's your day been going?
It's good, man. It's super cold outside, but I'm warm inside and it's, you know, been good, man. Normal day.
Very nice. So, you know, we've worked together in, you know, a number of different areas. And, you know, what intrigues me about your work is, you know, the creative aspects of it and the reflection. You know, you work in law, but you also work on the creative side, right? So keeping marketers and advertisers like me potentially out of trouble, you know, and essentially, you know, we have all these great ideas, you know, schemes to take over the world and get the message out there. But I guess you help a lot of artists and creatives like myself fine tune their message before they get a cease and desist or so.
So I usually like to help people before they get, you know, some nasty gram. But a lot of times it's like, I don't get to talk to them until after they get something. They're like, oh crap, what do I do? Like, how do I respond to this? Or do I respond? Or am I going to jail? You know, some people just have no idea how things work. Am I going to jail? Just tell me, this face cannot be in jail. It's like, I don't think you're going to jail. Very low likelihood. However, let's read it first. No, you know, yeah, Zach, my experience, you know, I am an attorney. But I did have a lot of kind of different kinds of experiences before I became an attorney. I went to film school. I love, you know, acting and writing, and I sang in Glee Club. And so I've been around, like, creative people and artists, I would say most of my adult life, right? Always being in these kind of unique situations. You know, I worked on film sets, and even as an attorney, been involved with filmmakers, film producers, television producers, authors, artists. I love these people, musicians. I get along with creative people really well, right? And because I am one and I was one. And what I say a lot of times is, if I met me 20 years ago, I probably would be making movies and not, I wouldn't be a lawyer if I met someone like me. So that's who I try to be with some of the artists and the creative people that I work with. And this includes entrepreneurs, right? A lot of entrepreneurs, they need help bringing together the business side and the artistic side, right? And kind of marrying it. And I think that's where I try to be very useful to those kinds of people.
So that being said, I mean, was there a specific training or a mentor that got you really interested in law, or maybe even something you did along the way that you're like, so, man.
Yeah. My path to being a lawyer was very different, I think, than most lawyers. Mm-hmm. So I never thought about being a lawyer any day in my entire life until in February 2009, I was actually running a media department, doing audio and video and marketing, like probably not what you do, but probably more of like video production side. And I was doing marketing, graphic design and stuff like that. And I came home from work one day and my wife basically said she was waiting for me. And it was kind of one of those moments where you're like, you know, when your spouse is waiting for you at the door, like something important is going to be said and you don't know if it's like good or bad, but it's probably not good because just because, right? Yeah. So she was waiting for me and she said, we need to talk. And my first thought in my head was, you know, this sucks. My wife's leaving me. This is horrible. But she didn't. She basically said, hey, you don't seem like the same person I married 5 years ago. You don't seem as happy. You used to be always so excited and people would love spending time with you. And you just don't seem like that person anymore. So she just had this plan. She's like, hey, I think you got to go back to school. I think you should go to law school because it's 3 years. I'll work. You go to school. You can still work part time, you know, and you can get a full ride scholarship. And she had this plan laid out. And up until that moment, I had not thought about going to law school one time. And it's crazy. And so, and it happened very quickly. We said, well, let me think about it and thank you for loving me and trying to, you know, make our lives better. So 30 days later, we prayed about it. We kind of said, hey, is this the right thing? Mm-hmm. You know, in March 2009, we said, let's do it. June, I took the LSAT to, you know, the entrance exam. September, mm-hmm. I got accepted. December, I literally quit my job mid-December. And January 2010, I was sitting in a law school classroom. Just total 180, right? Changed career directions completely. So I never thought about being a lawyer until my wife confronted me, but I did see how someone like me could really use a legal background and a legal degree, right? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm always thinking creatively. I've written screenplays, right? And you know, I told you, produce movies and act and, you know, have all this other background, right? I write children's books. So I thought if I added the legal side, that legal experience and legal acumen to everything else that I love to do and that I enjoy doing and my experiences, I thought I would be really useful. I thought it would be a great skill set to combine. And it's largely proven true, right? I've really had some amazing experiences just combining that kind of business and then legal and that creative side. It's been really great. I've been able to help a lot of people.
Understood. I mean, usually when somebody says they thought, it's leading up to a tipping point of but. But no, so it's led to, so, you know, it's led to a lot of success. And I guess, you know, at some point, you know, the story might change, the path of the story might evolve where, you know, your legal background got you into that next, you know, that next level situation potentially.
Well, I think it's unique, right? I think the law doesn't mean you just have to do one thing. That background is useful in so many areas. And that's what I've noticed. Even, you know, you go to a movie set, there's sometimes you just need a lawyer, right? Or, you know, you work with a startup business, not even entertainment related, but you have an entrepreneur. Sometimes it's like, there's a problem. We got to figure this out. We need a lawyer.
Yeah, I guess. So that's how you got into practicing law is a little bit of, I guess, your wife was a big part of the catalyst, huh?
Listen to your wife. Or if you're going to get married, you know, pick a good spouse is, I think, the moral of the story.
They say happy wife, happy life, I believe. So.
Truest thing said, right? There's not much truer. So.
For sure. How many kids do you have?
We got four kids. So.
Four kids.
Yeah, crazy house. They're all, you know, 14-year-old is the oldest, and then the youngest is 7.
So an active household, I assume.
It's crazy over here. Yeah, you know, I think kids are the most fun part of life, personally. They're certainly challenging, but I feel like I've learned just as much from my kids as I've tried to teach them, right? It's been a great experience. I love my kids, too. I mean, the whole reason I started writing children's books was because I wanted to spend more time with my kids. And we just took silly stories, and we said, well, let's turn it into a book. And that was the impetus how I started writing children's books. It wasn't, hey, I have this dream to be a children's book author and to, you know, turn this into some, you know, new career. It was, no, I just want to hang out with my kids more. And I like making them laugh. Like that's awesome. That was it. And I also wanted to teach them to be entrepreneurial. I wanted to show them, hey, here's how, when you have an idea in life, it doesn't come across where you just go to school and school teaches you everything. No, you have an idea. How do you learn how to execute that idea and make it something real? And so I thought, well, wouldn't this be great if I just did something with my kids? Instead of saying, hey, I'm just going to go to work, kids, and you'll never get to see me in this realm where I'm in my, you know, being an expert or I'm doing my job. You won't get to see me. And I'll just see you in the times where I'm off the clock, so to speak. So I thought, well, what if I could participate with my kids in a project and do it with them? And so that my kids actually drove that part of my life, really just wanting to spend more time with them.
That's awesome. And definitely, you know, I have young children as well. So I believe there's a lot of things to be learned from. Yeah, they get you out of the house more. I'd say that. You know, they get you engaged in like the real world of what's going on. And, you know, post COVID, I believe that's very a COVID era. I think it's very important because a lot of people use it as an excuse essentially to not get out of their house. And yeah, they have a lot of screen time or whatnot. And it's just like they're not out there engaging in the real world of like what's going on. You know, they're just basically bubbles in the matrix in a lot of ways. But it's cool because you get turned on to, I believe, a lot of things that you might not see as a working adult, right? Like there's definitely a lot of trends or like specific things I believe that they catch on or, you know, get influenced by that are, you know, intriguing as an adult to like learn a little bit more about or, you know, the viral aspects of what is, you know, empowering, you know, community.
One thing, you know, this is what's interesting too. I think kids understand so much more than we think that they understand, right? Mm-hmm. And they're really, they do, they can pick up and learn things so much quicker than adults sometimes. You know, here's a story. We were writing, we wrote our first children's book, and I was trying to teach my kids in business, you can't just do one thing and then sit and rest and stop and think you've arrived. So I said, look, mm-hmm. we're about to launch our first book. What should we do as a group together? And we had this discussion, and they said, well, Dad, what's our next book? And that's exactly where my mind was going, but I didn't want to tell them. But they said, well, Dad, we can't just have one book. You have all these other stories that you've told us. We should do the next book. And it was just this beautiful interaction with these kids where I just asked the questions and they answered it. I didn't tell them that. And that's what I was thinking. Let's do another one. But they said, Dad, you can't just have one book. Our favorite authors have all these books. We got to do this. So that's awesome. An example where the kids, I think, understand a lot more than we think they do.
Oh, it's wonderful. I took my kids to a park that I've been taking them to. It's a place called Gumbo Limbo State Park. It's down here in South Florida. And it's a turtle rescue, turtle rehab. But I've been taking them there since they were very little, right? Since they were probably like 1 or 2 years old, and like every year since then. And just to hear them like chatter about like what they were going to see, like in the car, just like talking about what they were excited to see, or like different elements of what they saw last time, what they plan to see this time, is interesting to get their perspective on that perception of the world and that, yeah, what they're about to engage with. It's pretty cool.
They get stuff. Sometimes we think we're the adults. We know everything, right?
Yeah.
But they get it almost better than us sometimes, right?
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, it's important to get them out there and get them to engage as like fans and be in the room I get them out to the movie theaters. I don't know. I do a lot of like, yeah, I coach sports teams. Like, do you have certain non-negotiables with your work and
life? Yeah, I try very hard to like be a dad, right? Like I intentionally don't have many hobbies just because my life is crazy. Work is crazy. And, but I think I try to spend time being a dad when I can. Like, so for example, writing books with my kids, that was a way to spend more time with the kids. I'm learning though that I have to kind of lean in because every kid is different. I have a boy is the oldest, Max, and then I have three girls. And so Max now is all he wants to do is work out. Like that's it. He just wants to work out. He's tracking like his bench press and, you know, deadlift. And so if I work out with Max, and he loves it. He's like, Dad, let's work out together.
Yeah.
But my girl's very different. So it's like, I'm learning that you can't, it's not a, it's just like any other relationship, frankly, right? You can't say, hey, if you're my friend, we're only going to do these three things and we're not going to do anything else. It's like, no, every relationship is different. It's just like with a client. You can't treat every client the same. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think you'll have any clients, frankly, right? Maybe you have one, right? So it's interesting to me. Like, I try to be very flexible and make sure I'm spending time and being responsive to where they're at and giving them space to explore, right? I want them to figure out what's interesting to them, figure out what they're excited about, what they're passionate about. I think that's where it's like exciting to me to see that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And it's those excitements and those passions that will, like, I think get you into learning more about, you know, trends or like what's currently going on or what's a hot topic. I mean, I shared with you, yeah, I was turned on to Mr. Beast and a lot of that, you know, great production he's doing to make himself a YouTube star and some of these other, you know, aspiring YouTube celebrities out there that have just huge followings. And it's, you know, it's great content, information, production, and time well spent by them to create content, sticky, information that people want to engage with and actually watch.
You know, Zach, what's fascinating to me about like this, just social media right now, it's very interesting. When I got out of law school, actually, when I was in law school, I was told, delete your Facebook account. Don't do anything on social media, right? Just take everything down. And I had just been I ran a marketing department. I went from running a marketing department where social media was like up and coming, like 2006, 7, 8, 9, right? Mm-hmm. So I, at that time, was like very much like Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn was just getting started, or MySpace was around, right? I remember looking at job applicants' MySpace accounts and just seeing like what they're about. And I was told, delete everything. And I thought those people in law school were crazy. I thought, you don't understand anything about this trend that's happening. I said, if I learn how to use it, then I will be very valuable, right, mm-hmm. to anybody. And so what's interesting to me is now when I meet a lot of these people where those same people now they're like, okay, well, maybe I'll be on Facebook or LinkedIn. They actually look down on some of these influencers that you're talking about. They think that, oh, they don't actually work hard. I've been very blessed. I've been able to represent some of these, what I would call very, very large influencers, right? Mm-hmm. That have millions of subscribers that, you know, I've had conversations with them. I've been in like business settings with them. And I'm going to tell you right now, they are extremely sharp people. It doesn't matter how old they are. Like the 21-year-old guy blew my mind how sharp he was, how intentional he was, how hard he was working. He's like, these are my shoot days. And he was so intense Like, I'm just saying, like, people don't understand, like, these are very sharp business people. And you might look at it and you say, look at this silly video, right? Or you don't take it seriously. But in reality, those people are very sharp. They are on top of it. They understand what they're doing. And some of them are making millions of dollars doing what they're doing. Yeah, so to me, it's very interesting to see the dynamic, right? And people should study them because they know something that we don't.
There's a lot of science behind it, right? There's definitely data and stats. And even if you look at the evolution of, I would say, like, theatrics, like from the movie theater to the Netflix screen to the YouTube or like Instagram stars, like, I think they all have their place and they all have, you know, a skill set or an artistry that, like, they're doing. Like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, for example, takes a lot of passion in jumping into a character for 3 to 5 years or whatever it may be, where he just becomes that specific person, right? And then you have specific individuals that have that same type of persona for specific shorts or self-produced, you know, selfie type things, or going out and engaging with the world for what their followers might find to be interesting. I mean, look at, you know, what some of these, you know, all the way up to this most recent Tyson fight. It's just,
you know. Is that really a fight? I don't know.
It was an influencer getting himself in the ring, you know, and he's got a negotiated fight right now, I think, with Conor McGregor. So it's
is that really?
Yeah, I think so. That might be a little more dangerous than Tyson at 60. But there's definitely the pedestals and these, like, the PR rungs these individuals have climbed via social media. It's amazing. It's without that traditional house essentially pushing them to new levels. They've gotten themselves there.
So it's so interesting, this discussion. I kind of love the direction. It's something that I believe is true, that I work with my clients on, and a lot of how I'm trying to operate my life is every business is a media and entertainment business, whether you think you are or not. And I really think that principle is true. And one of my specialties in law is actually helping people think about their business like a media company, like an entertainment company, even though you're not. Your business isn't media or isn't entertainment. You're not Disney. You're not Universal, right? You're not Sony, but you can still think like those companies and still protect your intellectual property like those companies. And in fact, the exact same things that they're doing, you can do. And that's, I think, where we're at as a society. We don't realize it. I mean, a lot of people realize it, but I think there's still, you know, 90-95% of the world doesn't get it, that's the world that we're living in.
Well, it's an interesting world, I would say, in a lot of ways, as to, you know, I would say it's this influencer economy. It's also having intention, like intentionality of what you're doing and the direction as to where you're taking things. And you can be, I guess, self-produced and come up with, you don't need the distribution of a Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC anymore to make the noise that a lot of people are doing via social media. I mean, look, what, TikTok was shut down, you know, for 24 hours recently, and some people went bonkers, I think.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, you know, some influencers are just like self-built off of like specific mediums. Like going back to Mr. Beast, he is intentional about his YouTube account and the direction as to where that goes. And that's one of his main drivers. I believe he also has an Amazon Prime show right now too. But YouTube, it's been his like main medium and outlet for distribution and to build up the following as to what he built to this day.
What's interesting too, I love this topic. So I've actually studied this quite a bit, right? So you have the one channel or the one platform that you become successful on, and it not only leads to other platforms, it leads to other businesses. Mm-hmm. Where now, and this is what I learned from working with some of these very high-level successful influencers, is they, like, new opportunities are created, right? Because you're just, what you were just saying, you're removing that distribution bottleneck. Now it's like, no, anyone can get distribution. For some people, that's great because they're talented and they would not have a chance at getting distributed before. For other people, that's not good that anybody can get distribution, right? So you have to, like, it's really this time where if you're really good, you can attract an audience. And now because of the other opportunities that are out there, you don't even need that big of an audience to actually turn it into something professional. It's super interesting.
If you look at the economics of it, of how many followers somebody has, and if they turn, you know, 0.5% or a percent into actually like paying members or, you know, part of their influence group, they make substantial incomes and have, you know, a substantial business as a result. It's also interesting because, you know, even in our content production for myself and for our firm Exults, we've been a lot heavier in it, I would say, over the past year plus. I've always been one for like creating like spots and like commercials, putting up our own billboards, radio ads, TV ads, to build the organization, build the company. And we go from this environment where people have a, I would say, like a traditional production mindset where, you know, you invest heavy in this particular like 30 second piece or 60 second piece, and then you're just like, whatever, like happens to the rest. Whereas now we're in a different world where it's like, you got to have a regiment. You got to have some partners that can help you execute and hike up your frequency to be top of mind, distributed frequently, because you get rewarded for those things via these social platforms.
It's not just, you're saying one piece of content, like, hey, we made one piece and we put super high production value into it. Now I think you're seeing, and this is interesting to hear, hey, we need that consistency. We actually need continuous content rather than just one super high value, high production value piece.
Oh yeah. It's like, I would say, you know, even going back to the artistry of like the cinema, right? Like you have a Steven Spielberg, iconic, like best, you know, director of all time, executive producer, always, you know, operating within these confines of like 2 to 3 hour movies.
Yep.
Yeah. Working a few years to do that. It's going to be epic when we see a creator come out, potentially it's Mr. Beast and we're just living in it, but where they have this like constant flow of highly produced content that just intrigues the world and engages the world and just has like a message or a dialogue that's being built, you know, a thread throughout all of this like production that's just gonna, you know, take things to the next level.
It's fascinating to me. Well, especially with the cost of productions going down, right? Yeah. Even high-end production. I mean, like maybe it's still like very, very high-end, right? Like biggest blockbuster movies, they're still super expensive. But but if you go like a notch or two down, you can actually have very high production value at very inexpensive prices, right? At some point, the most expensive piece or the hardest piece to get is the talent. But if the talent is you and your personality, your brand, this is what you and I have kind of talked through, right?
Yeah.
Then you have a low cost production. You bring the talent, you bring that value. So interesting to me, right? And talk through marketing with lawyers and things like that. I know this is kind of what you do, but to me, it's very fascinating because it doesn't apply to lawyers.
Oh, it applies to every field right now that, you know, that we're in, or like what you start to see happening. What I always find intriguing or interesting is like when we talk to, when I personally like talk to like clients or like prospects or even friends about this, it's like, regardless of what you're going to do, there's going to be fans and there's going to be haters. It just so happens with success, always. Like there's no middle ground. If you're making an impact, there's going to be winners and there's going to be losers. We all play the game to win, you know, or we hope that we're all playing the game to win.
You're trying to win.
Your team is, right? So, you know, when you're looking at these things and you start to look at like content production and, you know, there's you got to almost have like a fearless mentality of persistence, of like how, you know, the landscape's evolved where it rewards like persistence and momentum and just this path to, you know, to succeed at, you know, at varying costs. Yeah.
There's two thoughts I think that trigger my mind when you say something like that. One is, when you're discovered by someone, if you have a library of content that they can go dive into, if they like one piece, that actually is a multiplier, right? Because now it's now they can go and dig in and look at everything you've done, and that adds massive value and that builds loyalty and a fan, right? Mm-hmm. The other side of it too, and this is what I thought about when I was doing my children's books, was I want my first book to actually divide people. I want people to know right away whether they like it or hate it. Because the first book I wanted to create fans that would be loyal so that they would read all of our other books. So I intentionally tried to pick the story that I told my kids that would polarize people. And again, I think it really worked. I think there's a lot of wisdom to that. And not that I came up with that, just I grew up reading marketing books all the time. But like if I tell people the plot of my first book, which is the story of Cinderella, except when the clock strikes midnight, she doesn't lose her slipper, she actually toots. And so the prince doesn't find the slipper, he finds the smell of her toot. So he has to go around the kingdom asking all the maidens to pass gas to find the smell of his true love. Now, I tell that to people and people immediately think I'm weird or gross or they're offended, or they love it and they want to buy it. Like there's only two reactions.
Yeah.
And if you have kids, most of the time, like my kids will laugh. This is hilarious. But like some people, and I've run Facebook ads or run Amazon ads, and people have said like, this is gross. I can't believe the level, right, of, you know, crudeness that's allowed in our society. And I actually thought I should just run the 1-star reviews because they're actually great reviews. Like
run them as ads.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I'm like, maybe I'll start doing that because this might make somebody want to read the book, right? But I think it's really interesting what you said about you almost want the content to polarize people and either make them pick a side, make them say, I love it or I hate it. And it's like, right? I mean, what do you think?
I can't agree more. I mean, even when when I started down my more like aggressive content journey, yeah, you have people out there that are like, oh, this just isn't done in our industry or space. Like, you shouldn't be doing this. And it's like, yeah, I should be. And it's like, actually, some of the greats in our industry are like, you know, some of the largest players in our industry produce content and they put it out at such a rapid clip. It's just the ability to be able to like keep up or get into the game. It's like, if you're doing something and it's you know, basically, I would say there's efficacy in what you're offering, you're delivering results, and yeah, you're spreading like effective knowledge. Like, there's no harm in sharing information as to what you do. I think it's actually great because there are some people that might not be the right fit for where you are as a professional, but can use the knowledge base to get themselves to a specific level to where they one day might be able to, like,
yeah,
you know, you might be an aspirational purchase for them at some point, or you're supplying them the information that they need to succeed. There's an abundance of content out there on YouTube and other mediums to learn so much knowledge right now. It's even, you know, it's shuffling the education field. It's a hyper evolution as to what we're seeing.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's amazing the content that's out there.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, like you were saying about people like going and searching like other assets or content people produce. I started listening to a particular podcast, Modern Wisdom. The guy's like,
yeah,
up to like episode like 850, 860, and I'm just like, as somebody that's like starting to get into more content production myself, I'm going to flip this upside down. I'm going to start at episode one and start to like, I wanted to hear like the evolution of the content, or was the content exactly the same today as it was a few years ago? And what would be your guess?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would suspect it's different, but
yeah.
Yeah,
definitely different, definitely evolved, like from the placements to the questions he asked to the length, you know, to the quality of the guests and like how it's, you know, it's been, it's pretty cool to see the evolution.
So here's a question for you. In your experience, because I've thought through this and talked to people about this, a lot of times people want to start telling stories and marketing and doing something, right? But they feel paralyzed because they're like, oh, I don't know what to do. Are you of the mindset like just do anything and then kind of figure it out? Or do you feel like, hey, it's better to have this plan and say like, here's my plan, I'm just going to go execute it? Or do you think it's somewhere, you know, somewhere in between?
I mean, I definitely believe like over aggressive planning leads to paralysis and nothing ever ends up happening. So I'm a strong proponent of getting out there and just getting started, because I don't think that your voice today is going to be your voice in a few years. It's just not going to be the same to stay relevant, or you're also going to learn about the audience's reception and the path as to where you have to go.
Yeah. Now, how much do you think even it's like listening versus talking, if that makes sense, like listening to the feedback you're getting, listening to see what people are interested in, the topics, could be even the type of content that you're putting out.
I believe it's interesting, right? So if you're putting out strong enough content, or you're getting enough eyes, you'll get feedback via the likes, via the comments. You know, that's a loaded question in a lot of ways, right? Because even, you know, here I am interviewing you, but we're having pretty great conversations. So when you listen to some of these podcasts, a lot of it is the host listening to what the guest has to say. And one of my favorite things about podcasts in general is people that you would love to sit down with for lunch or beer, you know, definitely they get interviewed on a lot of podcasts, and the expression of what they'll say is completely different than their art. One guy in particular would be Matthew McConaughey, who's an actor
yeah,
by trade, who's great, but on a podcast, he'll talk about his lifestyle and
he's fun. He's fun to listen to, right?
Oh, he's awesome. He's amazing. And you know, even, you know, Tony Robbins, like from his, you know, inspirational performances to his podcast interviews, completely different arena or set of conversation that he'll have. So the format of content, I believe, yes, there's a lot of listening going on, and if you studied enough, there's definitely tricks to the trade of, you know, how things are propositioned, specific questions that are asked.
Yeah.
And even I would say like the speed of dialect and just, you know, the environments as to where some of the interviews are done. There's a lot of cool aspects to the art, especially if you watch. What's interesting is like great interviews of our time were done in the confines of traditional media in a lot of ways. Like Barbara Walters used to get all the best interviews in 60 Minutes, like on 60 Minutes. And then, what was it? Oliver Stone, I think, went in and interviewed Putin like for a long period of time in Russia. So it's like you have like these like very like interesting arenas as to where a lot of like historic interviews have been done. And now you have a more rapid cadence of interviews being done because of like what we talked about, like the walls of distribution essentially being annihilated or coming down. You have Joe Rogan, who, you know, at one point was the Fear Factor guy doing improv in Los Angeles. I had, you know, the ability, I saw him like way back when. I was like,
really?
I was in Los Angeles for New Year's, and I was like, let's go to the improv comedy show. And it was like, Joe Rogan's the like headliner. And I'm like, the Fear Factor guy, you know, he wasn't necessarily the podcaster.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
and he was awesome. But there's a guy who's been fine tuning his art, his craft, and you know, he's got the ability to carry the conversation, the dialogue. So, you know, listening to the audience is important, but also I'd say like listening to guests, like understanding where to carry a conversation or the direction to create the richest content is also part of the form in itself.
Yeah. I do think there's some magic in a lot of the long form content that's coming out. And I suspect it's partially because it's harder to create that mask, right? It's harder to be inauthentic for 3 hours or 2 hours. It's much easier for who you are to really come out. And I think that's what a lot of people, at least for me, I'm attracted to that. I'm like, oh, this is what it'd be like. Like McConaughey, like you said, he's talking about how he makes his steaks. Like when he does that, don't you want to just go have a steak with Matthew McConaughey? This sounds incredible to me. Right. I mean, or, you know, stuff like that. I'm just like this, that'd be great. I'd love to do that. That'd be so fun. Like, let's go have a steak with McConaughey.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of like interesting aspects, but one thing in marketing and advertising that I always look at is essentially like what overthrows the White House, or like, what are some of the influencers that like, that really led up to society voting in a particular individual. If you look at the most recent, you know, results and you look at like some of the, I would say like the Doppelgangers, like they pulled out, like they just pulled out some like great things, like out of the woodworks, like leading up to the election. Like they, you know, it's like being on the Joe Rogan podcast, working at a McDonald's drive-thru, just continuing to do some of the stuff that they're doing on social media, and just having like consistent messaging that didn't even acknowledge the other side, right? Like that was what I found very like interesting. And at the end of the day, I think some parties need to learn to kick themselves in the ass and be like, maybe we gotta get a new marketing or advertising agency, because all of our ads featured the other guy. It just makes no sense to me when I'm like, I'm watching a sporting event, or I'm on a flight and I'm watching an ad and I'm like, brought to you by who? I'm like, but the other guy was in the commercial the whole time. I was like speaking an endorsement for the other side. So, you know, I've had that conversation with a few people where it's just like, you know, some of the marketing and advertising we see to like, you know, just like win the biggest office. It's evolved as to how the landscape of like influence has continued to change. But like I said, you know, podcasts and like viral moments, I think were, you know, part of like the really big, like, you know, crux points that like really changed the momentum to swing the vote. Even my son was like laughing at like, you know, him working at the McDonald's drive-thru. Like I show my son the cover of the newspaper and he's like, that guy's funny.
Well, and I think to me too, you can't ever neglect, even in marketing, there's something about humor where you tie it into your marketing a little bit, mm-hmm. and it's memorable to people. It's people love people who make them laugh. Like that's just a reality of life. That's why mm-hmm. I love stand-up comics. I think I love a funny movie. I think if you bring someone laughter or joy, that's a very hard thing to do. We honestly live in a super messed up world, right? There's lots of messed up stuff. And we love the people who make us forget all that messed up stuff and just make us laugh. Like, and there's something to be said for that, even especially in marketing.
Well, it's that we get a lot more information. I think we have access to a lot more like data and news of particular events, right? Where we used to be essentially kind of like held to like what was actually printed in the newspaper, which I don't have I have a newspaper handy over on the other side of my office. But essentially, you know, everything that's fed to us through the news feeds here, social media, like we get way more information these days. I don't know if it's necessarily that more bad things are necessarily happening. I think we just know a lot more, and there's like, you know, there's gameable headlines that, you know, clickbait people like to put out there to make us kind of like think like, hey, you know, like, yeah, you got to be worried about this or that because, yeah, they want you to be concerned. But yeah, at the end of the day, you got to enjoy the moment for sure. So
I totally agree. So I probably have a bunch of stuff I'd love to share. You know, I think one of the things that's most fun for me are my children's books, right? Mm-hmm. How did I go? So I was originally writing a nonfiction book. And I was writing 15 minutes a day, and a good buddy of mine was like, John, you're not gonna be done until you're like 65. And so he's like, you have to write something, and you have to publish it in the next year. And it was 2019. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what am I gonna write in, you know, less than a year and get it out? Like, it's impossible. And so I started thinking, and then the next week, the same guy comes over to my house and he says, he loves to hang out. My kids love him. So they're jumping, treating him like a jungle gym, basically, right? Jumping on the guy.
Yeah.
And they start telling them some of the stories that I tell them at night, bedtime stories. And they're like, oh, my dad has this funny story about Cinderella. My dad has this other funny story about Rapunzel. It's called Manpunzel. There's some, all these funny stories. And I was like, kids, whoa, this time out here. These are private family stories. You're not supposed to share those with other people. They're not supposed to leave the house. And my great friend literally said, John, we found what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to turn some of these things into a children's book, write it and get it published. And I would say I was very against it. I thought my law firm would fire me at the time. I thought, I can't be writing a silly children's book because they'll fire me. But what ended up happening was this, and I think this was a great example of turn an idea into a result, right? Mm-hmm. I defined what a win was for me and my family. So win was, number one, I do something with my kids. Number two, I show my kids how to execute and how to start a business. Number three, I'd been in the entertainment space for so long, working with filmmakers, working with producers, working with musicians. I've represented authors trying to publish books. And a lot of times I felt they treated me differently because they thought I couldn't relate to them as a creative person. So another one of my objective was, I'm going to sit on their side of the table and try to do something that they're trying to do. I'm going to take my own advice. Whatever I would tell a client, I'm just going to do it myself. And I'll tell you what, that has been one of the most satisfying things I've ever done in my life. I got 4 books out now. The next 4 are written. All of them have been on best-selling lists. You know, the first one I wrote is still on, you know, top seller on Amazon. It's been amazing. And to see, you know, sometimes you think of results in numbers. I'm telling you right now, probably the best result I had was the day that we got the first batch of books, and my daughter opens the book and she sees her name in the acknowledgments. She's reading it out loud, and her face just changed, like, you know, to like this big smile. I'll tell you what, won a lot of cases for clients, help people buy and sell businesses, become very wealthy, you know, settle disputes, that kind of stuff. I don't think I've ever felt a sense of accomplishment as much as something like that. Or going into a kid's class, your own kid, where I'm reading a book to their class where the character is named after them and they're beaming. I mean, that is an unbelievable feeling. And I think, you know, I hope I can do that in other areas, but that's just one really, to me, an amazing example of, hey, you know, I knew my objectives, and I think every single one and more have been accomplished with that project.
That's awesome. Well, definitely. Thank you for sharing that story. No, thank you for the time today, John. Appreciate it.
Zach, thank you. Pleasure to chat with you, man.
For sure. For sure. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
That's it for today's episode of The Firm Report, brought to you by Exults, a full-service digital marketing agency helping law firms reach new heights. If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to like, subscribe, and share the show with someone who'd find it valuable. You can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.